It's the internet. You're busy. Let's do this. Welcome to the Games Beat Decides podcast. This is the podcast where we decide everything about the world of games so you don't have to think for yourself. I'm your host, Jeffrey Grubb. With me is
Mike Minotti.
In today's episode, we're going over some news, some games. But first, Mike.
Yo.
You frightened me earlier this week.
Yeah. You ready for your surprise?
And now you're holding something, and I'm even more afraid. Oh, no.
All right.
You said you learned a new song, so let's just get this over with. Let's get it over with. Do it. I'm listening.
Huh? See?
That's really good. I'm actually excited because I love that song.
Yeah, I know. Follow you around and play that like for hours.
I would be so happy. I would be, yeah, absolutely. I wish E3 was happening so we could do that. God.
Oh my gosh. Just this Pac-Man thing has made me realize, because like if you put a gun in my head, what year is my first E3? I wouldn't remember. But I do remember that I went to Pac-Man's 30th birthday party at it.
Whoa, okay.
So apparently.
Ten whole years. Wow.
So 10 years of E3s. But
I think you went to a couple before I ever went to one, and my first was either 2012 or 2013, but I think it was 2013.
But I think I know I missed at least, or I didn't go to at least one in the middle there, and then there's this year, so.
Yeah.
Been to like no 7 or 8. Yeah, no one's going this
year. We should just go sit there and just sit in the middle of the LA Convention Center,
play
some Switch.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, we might talk a little bit about Pac-Man, actually. There's some stuff happening. But first, though, I want to thank everybody for joining us. You can get more from me and Mike at gamesbeat.com. If you have something to share with us, you can email the podcast at games+podcast@adventurebeat.com. That's the plus sign. Thank you to Carlos Ayin, who is Insane in the Rain Music on YouTube, for the use of our theme song. And if you're listening to this on, you know, Twitch or YouTube, watching it there, watching it on the site, you could subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and more. And then if you like us, tell a friend or rate us on your listening app of choice. That really helps people find the show. Okay, yeah. So, Mike, should we just hop right into the news?
Got to do that.
Some stuff happened this past week. You know, just this morning, the MPD for April came out. And I think a lot of people were expecting this to be a big month, because everyone was at home buying games. But it was mammoth. It was massive. The total track sales for what the MPD tracks, and that's like new games sold, hardware, accessories, and game cards, which are basically just gift cards. That was up 73% year over year to $1.47 billion. And it's just, people really did buy video games.
Especially when we're in a year where that's supposed to be like, you know, like this waning of a generation. That's pretty nuts.
That is, yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, you really see that in the hardware, where hardware was up 163% to $420 billion. And that's just huge. And everything
that it's blazing.
Yeah, I would say it's blazing. Yes,
420 billion.
I would say. Yeah, you're right.
I wasn't sure that you got the joke the first.
I didn't get it first. No. I was a little slow. I got it now, and now all I can think about.
I really had to shove your nose in it.
It's been a long week, Mike. It's been a long week. I actually, you know what? I wrote this wrong in the headline. Yeah, all right. So Switch was number one in both dollars and units, everything was up. Basically, all the hardware was up. The Switch was definitely like it had a huge year over year increase, but it seems like everything was up about 163% or 160% year over year. That's for Xbox One and PS4 as well. And as for games in that top 20, it's what you would expect for the games that came out that month. The Final Fantasy VII Remake was number one. Call of Duty Modern Warfare was number two. And it still has the lead for like best-selling game of the last 12 months and best-selling game of the year so far. And then right behind that was Animal Crossing New Horizons, still at number three after finishing.
And Final Fantasy VII is already number three for best-selling game of the last, or is it this year or last 12 months? I forget.
I think it's so far this year. It might be on that 12-month list as well. It's definitely going to end up there probably at the end of this year. The rest of it's kind of, familiar games you would expect. NBA, Grand Theft Auto, Resident Evil 3 is still selling pretty well. One game that did completely just drop off, though, is Doom Eternal.
I don't know what's happening there. I wonder if it like still did sell well. It's just like these 20 games are that much better. Or, I mean, you think it would, for a multi-platform big AAA game that's coming out now, you think that it would have a little bit more to show here. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that like most people who were going to buy that game did buy it in its first weekend. Sure. But yeah, you're right. I would expect it to do better in the following month than this, just to completely drop out of the top 20. And it's not in the top 10 for any of like the platforms either. So on Xbox One or PlayStation 4, not in the top 10 there. So yeah, it's rough, I think, actually, for that game.
That seems worse. I mean, sequel to well beloved game in a big franchise, and it was well received, right? Like it got good reviews. So
yeah,
I wonder, are people just like so much more excited for more social games right now? But that doesn't really account for like Resident Evil 3 doing well still. And was Resident Evil 3, is that new this month or is this its second month?
I think this is its second month.
Right. So you would think
April,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for Resident Evil 3 to still be doing pretty good with, I don't know. Seems a little weird. Red Dead Redemption 2, though, starting to have not quite Grand Theft Auto 5 legs, but it is having legs. Like it's kind of proving true in that regard.
Right. Exactly. It coming back up and you know, even eking back in the top 10 at all is always impressive for a game that came out, you know, what, 2018 now?
Yeah. Years ago.
Yeah, that's really impressive. Not much else standing out here. Mortal Kombat continues to sell. Just Dance 2020 is doing really well for Ubisoft. Not much else happening in MPD. I mean, other than the, you know, this is what we were expecting, right? We were expecting a lot of money to be spent. Do you think like May comes back down to earth in a big way, or do you think we continue to see similar numbers?
I mean, I feel like we're going to see maybe not similar, because May doesn't, for one thing, doesn't really have a Final Fantasy VII remake kind of release, does it? But I mean, I think most people are still being pretty, you know, cautious. I know it's loosening up a little bit, but yeah, I'm not like this. I don't think the big like coming back to reality is going to be next month. But I think it's, you know, still going to do well. But yeah, it's going to fall off a little bit. I'm curious how Final Fantasy VII Remake compared to like Spider-Man or God of War in terms of like PlayStation 4 exclusives, right? Because I almost like don't think of it that way because it's not like a Sony Interactive or Sony Studios now, I guess, joint. But
right.
But I mean, that's the only way you can play it. So
yeah, I think. I mean, so Sony won't give those figures, but maybe Square Enix, as it hits certain milestones, it'll come back and say, yeah, we hit, you know, 10 million in so many days. I bet it stacks up really well, though. It seems like this. I mean, MPD said like this was the fastest selling or best launch month for a Final Fantasy game in the United States ever. So that's impressive on its own. This has always been a blockbuster franchise. And you also always felt like if this series could get itself together in a way where everyone was excited about one of these games again in the way that people were excited for Final Fantasy VII back on the PlayStation, it could be absolutely doing huge numbers every single time. And it could be doing the kind of thing where it's like, it is like Spider-Man where, oh, it sold, you know, 9 million copies in the first, whatever, couple of days. I think it's going to, if Square Enix wants to give us those numbers, they will, and we'll hear it that way. But yeah, Sony's not going to come out and say it. I'm not sure there's anything else much from MPD to go over, but there's more financial news that kind of wraps into this a little bit. Take-Two reported its financial results for Q4 and for its fiscal year. But you know, its Q4 also encompassed some of the, March, which encompassed some of the COVID-19 responses. And in part because of that, its net bookings, which is its like operational metric where it was like, this is what we're actually looking at to tell if we're successful or not. It's like revenue plus, it's like everything revenue as well as like anything it might like put on the books. Q4 net bookings was up 49% year over year. So another huge jump, way more than they were expecting. And that was to $729.4 million. This is, you know, again, it's not like Take-Two had any really huge launches. I guess, when did Borderlands come out? Borderlands came out at the end of last year, right?
That was last year. So
yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think about that too. Like, what was their last really big release? And I mean, yeah, nothing super crazy comes to mind. I'm sure forgetting something. I mean, it's hard for them because they have so many subsidiaries and whatnot. But yeah, gosh, maybe that WB game did super well after all. I don't know.
Yeah. I would say that that when they talked about it, they were very clear to make this about like, oh no, our catalog's still selling, but also just in-game transactions really are doing that well. Where when we the numbers it gave in-game spending, it calls it recurrent consumer spending, but basically just means if you're buying stuff in a game you already own from them, that was up 34% year over year. And then that represents a 51% of its total net bookings. So again, like just really strong numbers for if you are spending money in these games, you are you're part of a huge cohort of people who are spending money in these games, and that is really funding all of Take-Two's business. So Grand Theft Auto Online, Red Dead Online, NBA 2K, these were all examples that the company gave. And it makes sense, right? For what you would expect from people stuck at home, you know, people who already were playing these games now have more time to play with these games, and they're yeah, and their friends are online playing, which might encourage even more spending. So it's really sort of taking that, again, that snowball effect where you would expect to see this stuff. Yeah, it absolutely panned out that way. Do you think that this is like, do you think that we get to a point where this is a new normal almost because so many people did get into video games during this last couple of months? And
so they're going to... Yeah, so obviously, like, at some point, like, the curve's going to go the other way a little bit, right? But is it going to go all the way back? Is there a permanent bump now? I think maybe. I don't know if it's going to be huge. But you would think that maybe a lot, you know, some new people have been converted to gaming and or, you know, at least converted to specific games that they can now potentially keep spending money on. Like you know, somebody who got into Grand Theft Auto Online during this, are they going to stop playing Grand Theft Auto Online completely just because they can, you know, go to a bar now or go bowling? But I don't think so.
Yeah. Like you just, people went out and bought consoles for this. Like we see that in the numbers, they went out and they bought an Xbox One or a PlayStation 4 or a Switch. And like, if you get an Xbox One, chances are you're trying out Game Pass because there's a million free, like a couple of weeks to do that. Like it's usually included with the system. And if these are people who are like checking in on gaming for the first time in quite some time, they might be like, oh wow, this is way different, way more friendly. It's a lot more like Netflix, that the thing that I am paying for every month and I'm used to. This is cool. I could see this translating into long-term growth for the industry. That said, you know, while this is a good time to like for companies to be like, hey, yeah, we really did have a good couple of months, and games are the kind of thing that people want to play when times are bad and the economy is rough. I don't know. Again, I always want to go back to the recession proof question. Do you think there is like a downside where gaming starts getting hurt from this stuff, or do you think that people will continue?
I mean, if it's going to get hurt, it's going to be hurt in like terms of what the impact on development was, especially on maybe games that were in earlier stages, and that stuff that we'll be seeing like the effects of that kind of doled out over such a long period of time, like games that are supposed to come out next year or in 2 years or in 3 years. Like I bet this sucked for Elder Scrolls 6, you know, but yeah. Like how can we like, I don't know, like how to measure that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. To me, what it comes down to is, right now, the video game companies are making a lot of money. They're making more money than most other industries relative to like what they were making last year. But the people in charge of these companies are still like human beings that look around and see what the world is like. And I think they will still get scared of risk. They will be. I bet like the mechanics of borrowing money to like fund game development, which is like, you know, big publishers have a lot of money, but you know, a lot of times they're like saying, hey, we're going to go borrow this money and then we'll leverage that against our assets of future games that we're going to release. And if that becomes more complicated, they're going to get more risk adverse than they already are. And I think that, that's another thing that sort of could, build on itself to the point where the games that are getting released, start being less exciting. They're less exciting for people who, you know, pay attention to games, and anyone who might have just gotten in, might be like, oh, this is kind of the same stuff that I just tried. Or anyone who's been playing games for a long time might be like, you know, we're only getting stuff like Valorant or Amazon's game. Crucible, stuff like that.
I see you're really up on that one.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to download it on Steam, I guess. I didn't know it was going to be there.
I've downloaded it. I haven't played it yet, but I downloaded it.
Yeah, I haven't tried. Yeah, so it had mixed reviews. I'm like, oh man, already. But yeah, like if we just get more of that over and over from like these big companies because they're so afraid of risk because it's so hard to, you know, count on the future. I think that it could in the long run end up hurting games in some real significant ways. But who knows? Right now, companies are making a lot of money for sure.
What do you think about the way that Take-Two was like, this is how many games we're working on right now in the next 5 years, like 90 something. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, I mean,
yeah,
it's like, that seems like a lot. I can't quantify that. Okay.
That was good. That was going to be my next point. I'm glad you brought it up. That is, I think that's silly because I don't, I mean, okay. I think it's a good sign, actually. Let's get this out of the way first. It's a good sign that the people who do these conference calls with investors say to investors and analysts when they're talking to them, yeah, we are making a lot of games. To me, that means that like they think that investors want to hear that they're working on a lot of games, and that's a good sign for anyone who wants to play a lot of different kinds of games. It means that is some metric that they're looking at. Says if we make more games, we'll make more money. And I think for a long time, it was the opposite almost. Like you feel like Ubisoft flat out said, right? Like we're going to make fewer games. And,
yeah,
and it feels like if you're like, right. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, and you look at like Electronic Arts, they're like,
oh God, yeah.
When I think of EA, I don't think of a company who's like, well, you know what? If we make more games, we'll make more money. That is not, I don't think EA says that at all. But I don't know. To me, like if they want more games, I think that's a good sign. But like, yeah, do you really like? You really think that there is like a list of 93 real games that are going to launch over the next 5 years? Yeah, me neither.
I'm sure. Maybe there are 93 games in various stages of development, but like, so many of those are going to like get derailed or get turned to something else or pushed back or just canceled or maybe don't even really exist. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like, I can't remember how they broke it down, but there were like 63 so many, you know, new games, and those are the core games, and then 17 mid-core games, and another 12 or whatever.
They should have just said one of them super core, just like allude to it being
right,
Grand Theft Auto 6. like, this is the one that's the most important. We won't say what it is.
The first septuple A game.
Where it comes it's happening.
Yeah, and so yeah, but so when they like broke it down like that, if you look a little bit closer, it's like another one of the categories was like games moving to a different platform. So it's like a new SKU for a game that's already come out. So like The Outer Worlds going to the Switch, that is one of the 93 games. Right. So right when you start like breaking it down like that, if you start looking at the last 5 years of Take-Two, which I did, I like went back and I tried to make a list of like only new games and maybe remasters. And I put all those on the list and included mobile. And I got up to about 50. And I think, so if you started including games that like went from one platform to another or like re-releases where a game got backwards compatibility, if you start counting those, you get to 93 games really fast. And that's before like you start counting like, oh, Private Division only really got going in the last couple of years. It's only released a couple of games. And it's clearly... it clearly had a huge success with Outer Worlds, and I think they believe in that, so they will be doing more games with Private Division. But I think once you count in all those other factors and then Private Division, okay, I easily see how they get to 93 games, and it's going to look a lot like it did for the last 5 years, with maybe a few more of these mid-budget games coming from Private Division. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, you said Private Division is the only one that really had a big delay to announce of all this because Kerbal Space mm-hmm. Program 2 got pushed back to fall 2021, which is like a full year because it's supposed to be like this year, which I guess we could have assumed was like end of year. But that's something I don't think that one is all chalked up to COVID either. I think a full year, I think that delay was coming one way or the other.
I think you're right. And I know that development for that game has had some bumps. They've moved from one studio to another and created a whole new studio just to work on this game. And that only happened relatively recently. So, yeah, it seemed like this game was always going to have that delay. I think you're right. But I want them to get it right. Go ahead and get it right. No one's like delisting Kerbal Space Program 1. So I can always go back and play that and then get 2 done when you can get it done and just make sure it's not, I don't want it to be a disaster. So yes, definitely take their time with that. I'm glad to hear that.
I won't be disaster that you're sad.
Yes, I am. I'm bummed. But honestly, there's so many games. I still beat SnowRunner.
Brings me joy.
All right, Valorant's coming out June 2nd. Yeah, that's, I mean, I've every like other day I think, oh, I should try to like get a code for that game. I'm not going to watch Twitch. I'm not going to do that thing.
Yeah, you know, it's free to play, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, I mean a code like cuz it's in the beta, right?
Oh,
it's not out. I just said it comes out June 2nd. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, at this point the beta's ending on what, the 28th or something?
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So now that this all this stuff is like, okay, are my I'm just going to wait. Yeah, this is fine with me. I can wait till June 2nd. And the reason I haven't asked for the access to the beta is because I'm too busy. So I'm sure I'm going to continue to be too busy to get into this. And you know,
I've got Valorant covered anyways.
I'll embrace the Crucible community instead.
And I played a game of Valorant this week, and like, you know, I like Valorant, it's fun, but I was on a team, like all five of the guys on my team, they all sound the same. They all sound like that kind of deep voice, like college bro who's now like in his like mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, everything was cringe. Sometimes it was like a joke that it was cringe, sometimes it really was cringe, and it was hard to tell. And everything they said wasn't sincere. Like, you know, it's like everyone's basically talking like a Twitch streamer, and I wanted to hang myself.
That sounds like a very, that sounds like you may have slipped into hell for a little bit.
It was rough. It was not good.
Yeah.
It was not good.
And to be clear, like they're actually just saying the word cringe, right? When something is cringe, like you're not accusing them of being cringe.
No, it was like, oh, that's cringe, bro.
Oh,
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty cringe. You know, stuff like that. I'm like,
whatever happened to douche chills? Why can't they just say that? That's way better, because that's what they give me when they say cringe. Nah, give me those chills. Those
douche chills, like, all right. Yeah. So Valorant's coming. I'll be way more cringe for all.
Yeah. I'll give that game a shot on June 2nd. But yeah, I'm sure that I'll encounter some of those bros myself and not be too happy. I feel like we should do an update on like what's happening with this whole E3.
Do an update because you're the guy who knows.
I don't have perfect information.
Def Grub, oh my god, your stock is getting so high.
That is weird. That is really weird because it's like I've done stuff like this for a long time and no one noticed, and then it's like just suddenly like someone flipped a switch. It's like we listen to him now. Like,
I think I think the Nintendo Direct thing you did got so high profile, and then you were right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And then it's like, oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess
not everyone listens to you. Ugh.
I know. I have to deal with them listening to me. Yeah. And that's not great either. I've started having to think about my tweets before sending them, which is not who I am as a person.
So many more followers, though.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, I don't really check my follower count because, again, my Twitter is just my mental exhaust where I throw my bullshit. And if you don't like it, I think you should probably unfollow me. And I have no problem with that. And then I'm like, you know, I'm seeing all these notifications. I should check and see. And it's like it was like 5,000 higher than the last time I checked. So I'm like, okay, weird. But yeah, so
humble brag. Yeah. I totally egged you onto it, but humble.
Yeah, I mean, nothing else is. I don't feel any different. Nothing's changed, and so it's very weird to like when I go to Twitter feel that way, where I'm like, and then to see my name in like reset era threads. It's like,
I'm like, you're now a prominent voice in the community, Jeff.
Yeah, and I'm like,
you better be getting more people listening to this show now.
No, I'm an idiot. Go away, everyone. Go away. I'm an idiot.
It's true. Listen to him. He sucks.
Listen to Mike.
I know him. Yeah. He's awful.
Yeah.
Follow me.
All right. So I guess if we're going to do an update on Jeff Grubb's summer game mess.
See, that's the other thing. Branding. The branding is so good.
Yeah. Yeah. The branding is on. I will take credit for that. That was great. Yeah. Okay. So nothing major happened this past week. The summer game fest from Jeff Keighley had one thing, and it was that Valorant announced, but they might have had something else, but nothing big, right? We didn't have like any of these things like we had last week with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, right?
No, it was that they had something to do with the which I didn't quite understand, the Christopher Nolan movie being announced.
Oh, right.
Is there something with a Christopher Nolan movie and Fortnite, and I think Summer Game Fest was involved? I did not follow that.
Yeah, they showed the trailer for the movie in Fortnite, and yeah, I did not know it was Summer Game Fest was involved.
Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm making that up. I thought there was like there.
It could be. All right.
But anyway, what else is happening?
Anyway, so if I look at the calendar, most stuff is still kind of where it was last week. Maybe a few changes have happened. The Mel Gibson hint that I put on Twitter, just because I think it's more fun that way. It's, there's no point in me like spoiling that for people. That's still happening June 2nd. There will be some.
Do I know what that is?
We could double check. I think you probably do. Okay, we could double check afterward.
Mel Gibson.
Yeah, June 4th, this is something that I put there recently. There probably will be some news that day, but I'm not, no way am I guaranteeing that. I put that on the list for myself, but there probably will be some news coming June 4th. And really, yeah, of course, there's going to be a lot of news happening next, or
right, the week after next. When would have actually been E3?
Exactly, yes. So I think just like, yeah, there'll be game announcements. Then there's going to be like, you know, partnership announcement, platforms announcing stuff happening. That stuff will happen that week. You know, the PlayStation event, I think probably still happening soon, early June. That, you know, they said as much that it's happening
at
soon.
At one point, you were pretty confident about a specific date, but then you said that
June 4th. I'm confident about this new date, but now I'm like learning, like, now that people are listening, I'm actually going to like, I don't have to say the date. You know, I'm just going to say probably the first week of June, maybe, you know, and that, it's definitely early June, 100%. And that, you know, that should still, so, okay, on Twitter, when I explained like, okay, things are shifting around there, and it might not have as many games as before, people are like, oh, people are jumping ship. Third parties are out of there. There's something going on. And I'm like, okay, right. This is why I really have to like, be careful about how I phrase stuff. What was really happening there, I think, is that Sony doesn't want to have the disclaimer at the bottom of trailers saying like, this is running on a PC, but it's going to be optimized for PS5 or whatever. And in getting more strict about that, that there are some games that are moving off and going elsewhere. And it's not like it's nothing bad. I just think it's Sony trying to like really prune what it's showing to put everything in the best possible light.
And right. I mean, again, it's not a date they ever said, so why not push it off of the 1-2?
Right, exactly. And you know, and as for moving the date, yeah, exactly. I think what people need to remember is that there is Jeff Keighley, IGN, and GameSpot all trying to get everyone to come under their individual like corporate media event thing. And those conversations are still happening. They're all ongoing, especially for anyone who hasn't announced a specific date yet. And Sony moving stuff around to like maybe join with one other thing or not, one thing or the other, or to avoid something that they learned about, or to, you know, boost something else that they learned about, is going to continue happening, I think, up until they announce the date. And then, you know, there's, you know, people can go look at this list online if they want, but there's still the Games Radar stuff happening, Indie Live Expo, PC Gaming Show. June, the second week of June is Xboxing Day. And this should be I want to say it's like a hardware event, but I imagine that to me, this one sounds like this should be the one where they actually show what it's like to use the system. And they talk about the ways that their services are going to integrate with the hardware. And it won't be because like
are we going to find out about some more exclusive NFL content?
I think we should. Yeah, like we did.
You just tweeted out like the all the stories that VentureBeat wrote from like 2012 when like they had the big event for the Xbox One. It was so bizarre reading that stuff.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it was like,
that's a completely different system than what it became like a year later.
Yeah. And it's like you all the stories were like, you know, Microsoft is not sure exactly how like the always online is going to work. And they were all like really kind of negative stories, or the positive stories were like that. Like, oh, Xbox is going to have exclusive NFL content,
never existed or nobody cared.
Yeah. And either way, it's like, yeah, it's just vaporware that just came and went.
What?
Yeah.
Absolute hell.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, man, I hope they learned from all that. I mean, obviously they learned not to do most of that stuff, but in terms of actually presenting the system, really lean into the stuff you know you can deliver and actually matters to people. And I think this will be a big part of that. The second week of June is where that's scheduled for right now. Again, things could change, but right now that's their plan. And again, I think I have a pretty specific date for that one, but it can move so much. I'm just going to say the second week of June. And then the Cyberpunk thing, I'm trying to see if there's anything else.
Thing that Sega just said that they were going to be a part of with a couple other companies.
I don't know. I should probably look into that and update my list. I think, Nintendo's still a wild card, still going to be just doing things when they're going to do them. I think it's going to continue to be these trailers. Yeah, and then
so the new game plus Expo, it's going to be Sega, right.
Someone,
SNK.
Yeah, someone mentioned that. You're right. Yeah, okay.
And that's where I mean I'm. That's June 23rd. Yeah,
right.
The reason why I have that kind of marked up is because like it seemed like Sega was going to announce some Sonic stuff back at South by Southwest, and then that didn't happen, and like that's got to happen somewhere else at some point. So maybe this is it. I don't know.
Yeah. And then the Bit Summit also just got announced, which was like a Japanese indie gaming show, and they're going to move online and do one on June 27th and June 28th. Those are the new ones that got added here. And then, so that's like, that's starting to fill in like that back half of June, finally, because there was nothing from like June 11th, Cyberpunk, to June 11th, or to July 11th with like Warframe's thing.
What is the Cyberpunk thing? Is it just more another preview of Cyberpunk?
Yeah, I think it's like what they would have shown at the C3, like you know how they do the gameplay things. I think they're just going to do it here.
I know you got from the game. That's like a game I'm almost like sick of seeing at this point. Like
right, yeah, I just want to play it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Need to see anything else.
Right, it's out in a few months, so yeah, we'll be playing it soon. So I might just be like half pay attention to that thing. And then, yeah, early August, there will be a State of Play. They haven't announced that yet, but they're planning for one. And this will be one where they show off, their upcoming next generation games, but also like their current slate that they're still selling for PS4 at that point. So it'll be a combination, but they'll have a ton of games to show at that point. Okay. And then Riot and Blizzard are probably planning something for sometime in June or July.
That's interesting. What have you heard anything about BlizzCon? Like, do you think is that still something that they think is going to happen? I guess I should know more than you. That's my beat. So I'm almost embarrassed to ask you.
But you find it. I definitely don't know.
You're so ahead of this now. But.
This is what I know. Like, I gave you everything I know about that. Is it Blizzard and Riot separately? You know, obviously are going to have events probably in June or July.
Yeah, be funny though.
Yeah, they're at last. Yeah. But yeah, those are the big updates. There just wasn't a lot that happened in the last week. And the only things like coming up that changed were, you know, some dates are just starting to get filled out on this calendar, which you would expect. Do you think we'll get much this next week? I realized like, oh, it's Memorial Day week. People might take it easy before June and things really.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's much scheduled. I don't know. Maybe no. Nintendo's going to come in with another random announcement, but I mean, we're all basically waiting for them to drop the Mario remaster bomb at this point, right? And that's, you know, when's that happening? I don't know. So
no idea.
Or
no clue.
Pikmin 3 remastered, which you added in a story because you forgot that it wasn't announced.
I told you, I'm an idiot.
It's great. I love it.
I guess I could. I mean, some of the things like that secret EA game, EA Sports game that they were like, oh, it's a secret. People could guess, but it's UFC. So if people want another like thing, that's UFC. So there you go. Go right. Yeah, I mean, I don't think most people.
I remember
most people knew.
One of the first games I ever had to review was a UFC game, and I was really out of my depth on that one. I was like, UFC, eh?
Yeah. Have you ever watched UFC?
A few times. I've seen a couple. Usually, it's like I'm invited to a party. Right. You're playing the pay per view, right? I'm like, sure. It's not like it's awful to watch. Like, I get it. You know, it's
no,
watch people beat each other up sometimes. But,
All right. Let us move into what we have been playing, Mike.
Sure.
You want to go ahead and start?
Yeah, because I'm playing with Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition on the Switch, which I'm allowed to talk about in a preview capacity, so I can't review. It's weird, because, I mean, this game's been out for Wii and then 3DS, and I played it on both those platforms. I never got super far in it. Like, I'm like 10 hours in now in the Switch version. That's further than I've ever been. So it's hard for me to say, like, what's really improved or different. Like, it doesn't, like, suddenly look like an amazing game. I think most of the remastering work was with the character models. Like, those look better. Like, I remember back when I played it, especially, like, the way the mouse moved always looked weird. So that all looks better here. But this doesn't suddenly look, like, even as good as Dragon Quest XI or something like that. The more modern RPG. But it's fun. It's, you know, I like my JRPGs. It's kind of comparing unfavorably just in terms that, like, I loved Dragon Quest XI and I just played that. That was a really new, slick, very well put together very charming game. And even people who play Xenoblade Chronicles 1 know it's not like a very charming game necessarily. It's not trying to be. It's sometimes it takes itself a bit seriously for a game with like a bunch of anime characters in it. But
sure, yeah,
you know, that's good. I do like it more than Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I'll say that it's not quite as convoluted or bloated as that game is.
Does it have a boob sword, though? Or
no, it has a sword. I mean, the funniest thing about this game is, you know, the sword's called the Monado, and they say the word Monado a lot. And my I play Smash Bros. With my brothers a lot, and my one brother, he does not play JRPGs. Like, even in Smash Brothers, Shulk's in there. He just keeps saying Monado this. And he did. Chris kept saying Menudo, Monundo, about the Monundo art. So that's all I hear, like, this entire game is people screaming Monundo every 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. But, it's fun. I'm just kind of glad to see, like, the Switch becoming, like, big JRPG sort of haven with all the big, like, except for, like, the Final Fantasy, like, the newest Final Fantasy is just because of, you know, tech stuff and exclusive deals and whatnot. Like, I'm glad that it seems like everything's going there. Except for, again, bafflingly Persona 5 Royale. I'm not sure what happened there, but.
Yep.
Yeah, this is fun.
Do you think this is going to, like, fill in the gap for people who, either are coming off of Animal Crossing or are like the rare exception that don't like Animal Crossing?
No, I mean, I think this is still very much I think you have to like JRPGs, right?
Right.
Like, there are some JRPGs, like even Persona 5, like, maybe you don't like JRPGs, but you should check out Persona 5, like Final Fantasy 7 Remake. Xenoblade Chronicles is ultimately a JRPG for people who like JRPGs. Maybe like a bit more accessible than that, but not a ton more.
Right. Yeah, I do not have plans to play this game. If I was going to go ahead and play an RPG on the Switch, it would have been Dragon Age 11 or Quest. Whatever it is.
Not
Dragon
Age. Quest 11.
Not Dragon, Age. Yeah, non-Dragon Age, yes.
Yeah.
Dragon no, like Quest that's, 11.
That's totally like the thing right now. It's like, after I played it, that's what I would tell everybody. If you should play an RPG on Switch, it should be that. And if you want to play a remaster of one, I still think the best like remastering of an older RPG is Tales of... there's so many of them. Which one was
it? Symphonia?
Not Berseria.
Symphonia?
Not Symphonia. That's the GameCube one. Vesperia.
Vesperia, Jesus.
Yeah, okay. They're all made-up words except for Symphonia. So, well, I guess that's still a made-up word. It has a much stronger real root word than Vesperia.
Vespas. That's a real word.
It's a star in the game. There's a star called Brave Vesperia. I'm giving you some deep tales
I'm
up.
I'm like, lore. I didn't ask, but he's doing it anyhow. All right. Fair enough.
I'll do whatever I want. All right. What have you played, it's Jeff?
Fun. Clubhouse games. Can I tell people how we got this game?
Yeah, I think you should.
Yeah. So I'm like just minding my business, and I get a message from you, and I'm like, this game, like, you're like, here's Clubhouse Games. I'm like, that doesn't come out before a long time. What's going on here? And you're like, the next message, like, Nintendo was supposed to send me a Xenoblade Chronicles code, and they sent this instead. And then they're like, just don't write about it yet or whatever. And so Nintendo accidentally sent the wrong code for a game, and I've been playing Clubhouse Games for weeks, and it's great. In a preview capacity, it's great. I could still say,
yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty wild. That's
I don't really know much about. I did not play the other ones. So like, give me a quick like 4-in-1. It's a collection of like simple games.
So I think that's like the full title is something like Clubhouse Games, 51 games from around the world or something like that. And you really should just think about it as like the analog games that people play, you know, for decades and sometimes centuries. So there's chess and there's playing cards, you know, there's poker and blackjack, and then there's Mancala. But then there's things like, you know, dots in boxes where you have a grid and you're trying to like get more boxes filled in than someone else. And there's Connect Four and there's robot boxing, like the robot boxing toy. And there's like a lot of like toy games, like actual just toys, like remote control tanks or slot cars, stuff like that. So it's like all those games that you associate with just like, that are, they're not just like branded. So there's like yacht dice instead of Yahtzee. They have that kind of thing. But so it's like any sort of game that you associate with like playing with like a family.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just nifty to have this around, huh?
It is excellent to have around. It is, and it was on the DS as well. So there was a Clubhouse Games, which I thought was more popular than it, I guess it was. It must have just been like at the time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't ever know too much about it.
Yeah, I must have just like been in like the right bubble because there was a lot of people I remember being excited about it at the time. But whenever someone talks about this game, no one ever brings up the DS one. But the DS one came out and it was also excellent. But oh, hey, Jason. Oh, hey, Jason's whoa. Here. Hey, Jason. Hi. I'm going to. Jason's joining. Jason Wilson, editor at Gamesby. He's going to join us to talk about Maneater. I'm going to finish talking about Clubhouse Games, and then we'll go to Jason next. But Jason, say hi to everybody.
Hi. How are y'all doing?
Yeah, I'm glad.
Clubhouse Games is something I'm looking forward to.
You should be. So yeah. So okay. So there was the DS version, and now there's the Switch version, and a lot of the games are the same, but they've added a few, dropped a few here and there. There's and I guess that one of the big differences is that. On the DS, almost everything was controlled with the stylus, and here only some games, like darts, is controlled by the screen, or you could take off the Joy-Con and play that way.
Makes sense.
And that stuff still works, but the big change is really to sort of the audio-visual quality of everything. Like, right off the bat, like, the first game I was playing was Mancala, which is just like, you know, you're putting your seeds, and you're trying to get more seeds than your opponent, because it's a game from, like, when all you had in your pocket were seeds or whatever, like for thousands of years. Ago. And they talk about that in the game too. They explain where it came from, and it's every game's introduced like this really slick video where like they talk about that kind of stuff. And there's like this really like ditzy guy who loses at everything when they're introducing the game, but he like knows the most about him also. Yeah, yes, exactly. all that stuff is great. But then when you're actually physically playing the game, it has this really great physical quality to it where you put the marbles that represent the seeds into the Mancala board, and the marbles look really nice. They have this really shiny quality to them. The board is sitting on this really nice table, and everything looks like it's really well lit. And there's this great camera angle, it looks like it's shot with like a really high quality camera. And then you put the marble in the board, and it does that really satisfying sound of like a marble moving against a wood or marbles moving against one another. And every game has this attention to detail to it, where it is really satisfying just to play these games because they really nail this aspect of it. And then there's just like, it is really convenient to have a Switch Lite that just has like yacht dice on it, has Yahtzee. And you know, my wife got really excited about that because she's like, oh, I love playing Yahtzee. So we get, you know, at night we get the kids, we bring them up into the bed and we sit there and me and her play a game of Yahtzee while the kids wind down. And, you know, we pass it back and forth and it just works. And not having to like get everything out and not having to like have a shelf full of these very, very generic games. And then that's absolutely what they are, very generic games that, they're generic because they are world famous and they're fun and you want to have them, but I'm not necessarily, if I had to like get them out and put them on the table and clear off the table and then put them away when I'm done, it's a whole other proposition. It's a whole other, like, I am committing to this in a way that I'm not actually willing to commit to it. I don't want to have that bookshelf full of all these things. And I don't want to be like, okay, at the end of the night, now I have to put all this stuff away before I can go to bed. But with the Switch, you know, you really just boot it right up. It's ready to go. It's good to go. It really works out well that way. I'm really enjoying it. Full review will come soon. Honestly, since they sent us the code wrong, I don't think they actually sent us the email to tell us when all the other stuff, like when the review embargo is. But I saw that everyone was previewing the game and saying the preview embargo was up, so I could talk about it that way. So I got to remember to like email them and ask, but it should be coming soon. But yeah, absolutely. Jason.
Hi.
That was my start game.
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell us, tell everybody why you're here. So you're here to talk about a game.
Why are you here?
Well, I'm here to talk about Maneater from Tripwire Interactive, which is the shark RPG that is going to be at the Epic Games Store. It's going to be on PlayStation 4 and it's going to be on Xbox One. It came out today. Is that better?
Yeah, there's like a, it's much better.
There was a hint of a crackle.
A hint of a crackle, exactly. But I think we're good. I think we should be good to go. Go ahead.
Okay. So it's certainly a unique game. You're not going to see anything like it. I've never played an RPG where you're a shark. Now, the RPG isn't about, you know, branching story choices, you know. It's more about how you develop your shark. Do you want to go into a direction where your shark is got body armor? Do you want to go in a direction where your shark has bioelectricity? Do you want to go in a direction where, you know, every time you bite, you get more healing? not exactly vampiric. It's just when you eat things, you heal. So it's like fish are not also key to your evolutions and leveling up. They're also like little health potions that are in the ocean whenever you're hurt. So the game is cast in this motif where it's a reality show. And it's following one shark hunter named Scaly Pete. And at the beginning of the game, Pete kills your mom, cuts you out, cuts you, and then throws you to the bayou.
Come on,
Pete. Yeah, you're in the bayou. Yeah, you're on the Louisiana Gulf Coast. And then, you start eating and growing. And as you go through, you find these little story clips about Pete and what he's doing, and then you and the interactions with him, because you do have a couple interactions with him. And it gets kind of crazy towards the end. He goes off the deep end after you have an encounter with him, which leads to a very Jaws-esque ending. And as you go through, you have quests to take on apex predators in every area, which, could be, a nasty alligator or a barracuda, or at one point, the last apex predator you have to kill is a sperm whale, which was pretty ridiculous. And then you have these little quests where you have to eat people. And as you go, you have these bounty hunters you have to eat your way through. And they get a little crazy and silly. One, for example, is a mob boss who decides to, kill sharks in her time off. And she has this big, fancy speedboat that she chases you in. That was fun to destroy. And yes, you end up destroying fishing boats. Just think about what Jaws did to Quint's boat, except, you get to do it over and over and over again. And as you progress, the hunters get stronger, the hunters get more difficult. They start having a mines. They start throwing dynamite at you. They start having electric fields that interrupt and damage you. So it's absurd. It's silly. It's kind of stupid. I wish it talked more about the plight of sharks in our world, because it doesn't really mention so much about that. It's got good narration. It's got some good funny lines to it. Some of the quests are all, these dumb puns, like hungry, hungry hobos, for example, where you have to eat 10 hobos. I had a great time with it. I'm seeing reviewers who didn't enjoy it as much as I did, because they say it gets too repetitive. Yes, it does get repetitive, especially once you're towards the end of the game, because some of the quests are like kill 10 hammerhead sharks, and it's pretty easy to do that by the time you're a level 30 shark. But I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it at all because of the absurdity of, the Caesar smorgasbord, and you're the 300-pound guy who's there to eat it all.
Back when I would have rented games, this game definitely strikes me as a good rental. Do you agree with that, or does it surpass that?
Oh, this would be the perfect rental.
Yeah.
If there was a way, I guess you could with
Gamefly. Redbox and Gamefly, they still exist. Yeah, yeah. For sure. I don't rent games anymore, but I'm sure people are out there still doing it.
But this is the ideal rental game. This is, it's too bad that there's no demos anymore for this kind of stuff. But if there is one that comes out, take a look, play it. And if you decide you like it, it's only $40. So it's not a full AAA game price.
Did you ever play that Jaws game? I think it was the PlayStation 2 era. That was kind of popular. It sounds a little bit like that.
So I remember that game. Yeah. And I didn't play it, but that was one of the first reviews I remember editing when I started up at Ziff Davis. And Ryan Scott for PC Gaming World wrote it.
Oh, wow.
No, but not PC Gaming World. Computer Gaming World wrote it up. And, oh, man, it was bad. It was bad. And I remembered that. And I went into the archives I have here at home, and I read that. And it was, this is a lot better because it's totally tongue-in-cheek. Now, you have to buy the joke. If you don't buy the joke, you may not enjoy the game. And I can see why some people wouldn't buy the joke.
Would you let your kids watch it? Because I know your boys like to watch you play sometime. It's not like completely graphic?
There's blood.
Sure, yeah. I would expect that. But it's like, they're like rib cages falling all over the place or whatever?
No, it's not that graphic. Now, when you kill some of the bigger predators, they turn into chunks of meat that you eat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like this big chunk of blobbish meat. It's not graphic at all. And because it's so absurd, and you know, I wasn't afraid of letting them see it. I probably shouldn't have, but they thought it was the silliest thing in the world, and they thought it was hilarious. So
yeah,
it's hard to take that joy from them.
Yeah, I'll probably play it for my kids, because they, you know, Baby Shark, they're into anything shark still. So yeah, I'll see if they enjoy this.
And considering that when I was 7, I saw Jaws for the first time, and I haven't let my kids see Jaws yet because it was kind of a let's put it this way: I'm still dealing with the ramifications of that, and you know, 39 years later. So
yeah, I just listened to the podcast about the making of Jaws, and I'm like very in a shark mood as well.
I'm afraid of sharks. I don't like a lot of sea things that can hurt me. I don't know why. Alligators I do not do well with. Sharks are not too far behind them.
So this game, Mike, this game has muskie and alligators in it.
No, thank
you. Yeah. Now realize alligators don't go to Ohio. They don't live in Ohio.
But I go to Florida enough.
Yeah, bull sharks have been found as far north as Illinois in the Mississippi River and its tributaries.
I gotta hope they don't find that Ohio River connection.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope not. But yeah, there's it's really sad. But you know, parts of it are very pretty. The art direction they put into creating some of this underwater environments is really nice. I really enjoyed that. The fish models all look pretty representative of what you would expect, and some of them are actually very pretty, like the mahi-mahi.
Yeah, this is I always wonder like how underwater games do, because I will perform in the market, because I am afraid of underwater stuff, but I think being a shark sort of nullifies a lot of those fears. I think if I am the most powerful thing in the water, that would make dealing with like, oh, there's a shadow beneath me, much easier to deal with, because I got a lot.
But you gotta play Echo, Defender of the Future first.
I have been playing that, actually. What? I started that. Yeah, I started.
How did we
I
got not
that
talk cold. About it.
I don't. I totally forgot to put it on my list, but I started it, and it's you could tell it's a good game, but it's also like still the first part of the 3D like transition, and I'm lost a lot of the time. I don't know where I'm supposed to be going.
Are you missing that second analog stick?
Missing the second analog stick. It's not terrible, but they definitely do the thing where it's like you have to, I say the thing as if any other games really did this, but where like if you hold down the analog triggers like halfway, the camera will pan like halfway around them so you could see a side view. It's a weird system.
It's
but
like an honestly, racing game.
Yeah, almost, but it works fine. Like I'm having no problems controlling the game. It's just like, oh man, I wish there was a waypoint to like really help me figure some of this stuff out. So I'm popping open the FAQ, the FAQ here and there to help me get through it, and that's fine. But it's like it's still fun to like swim around as a dolphin and jump around in the really clear waters. But then like you do get attacked by a shark, and it's like, ah, this is actually really petrifying.
So you see you. It's actually, I think it's really fun to swim and explore this game, partially because there's a lot of these really silly landmarks. Like there's this one area where you have all the, you have a bunch of guys wrapped in white bags wearing concrete shoes, where the mafia is underwater. Another place, somebody decided to make an underwater museum. And so there's a Statue of Liberty and the Acropolis and a couple other things. That's all this collection. It's like, why is this here? And it's, oh, because it's silly. And there's a couple of shrines to Cthulhu you find. And so, I mean, there's silly stuff all over the place. And I really enjoyed finding it. I wanted to find all of it. And then if you really want some challenges, because your shark can jump really high once it gets evolved, there's these license plates that sometimes are like 20 feet above a bridge or, you know, inland. And, oh, one of my favorite moments in the entire game. So there's this area that's full of McMansions right on the water. And you have to eat a bunch of the people there while they're having a block party. And of course, because, you know, the shark gets to have some fun too. Yeah. And so the bounty hunters come after I eat enough people to show that I'm a threat. I go hide in one of the pools. And the bounty hunters can't get to the pool because it's in the middle of the land where they're going around, but they can't see you and they can't get to you. So then they leave. And I just thought that was hilarious.
That actually, that won me over. I'm definitely going to play it because that sounds really fun.
There's a skate park that has a waterway in it, and you get to go through there and eat skateboarders.
All right. I don't like Sharknado, but there was another sci-fi shark movie called Ghost Shark that I really like. And the Ghost Shark, as if there was any water at all, the Ghost Shark could swim out of it all of a sudden. So like there was like the pool, and you know, obviously swam out of there. But I think it like swam out of like a cup of water as well. And I'm like, just all of this sounds a lot like Ghost Shark. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah. It's silly and it's fun.
Yeah, that's what I want.
But you have to buy into the joke. You have to like games that aren't that serious. They're doing something that's a little different. It exists really just for entertainment.
Yeah. All right. We should probably wrap up this episode, though. Any other final thoughts on Maneater before we wrap up, Jason?
Yeah. You know, Tripwire Interactive is known sometimes for making some zany games. And this definitely fits it.
Yeah, what else do they do?
Zombie Army, for example.
Right, that's right. Yes, that's yeah, the
Zombie Hitler game.
That game has a lot of fans. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's silly and it's fun, and you know, we do put a lot of cachet into games that have something meaningful to say or have something interesting to show to the world. But sometimes it's really cool just to play a fun dumb game, and this is a fun dumb game.
I'm a big proponent of that. You know, Roger Ebert, I don't think he was like the greatest film critic of all time, but I think he had some real nuggets of wisdom. Like when you're a kid, you like Godzilla or something. I think it was like when you're a kid, you'll be obsessed with Gamera because it's, you know, it's silly and there's all kinds of fun action, and the men in rubber suits are either entertaining to you or they're silly or whatever. And then you'll get older and your taste will become more refined and you'll like Air Force One, because it's, you know, it's slick and it looks like a well-made movie. And then as you mature even further, you'll come back around to, Gamera and realize that actually it's way better to be like a silly movie that you don't take seriously. Now I'll go one step further and say, then you do that also with Air Force One, which is also a silly movie. You don't have to take seriously. You can still enjoy. But, I think that the same applies for games for sure. I just want a couple of dumb games all the time. So yeah.
Yeah, you know, and considering that you play, you know, if you're like me, you play a lot of serious RPGs and games like that that have some very big story heavy beats. It's nice to play something that doesn't.
Yeah, for sure.
Every now and then.
Anything else you've been playing, Jason?
Yeah, I've been playing a game that comes out of early access next week called Monster Train. Which is a deck-like, rogue-like, but you're on a train in hell, and you're a bunch of demons, and you're trying to survive the attacks by heaven, and you're on a train, and you have this, excuse me, artifact.
Just like the Bible said. You have to keep
alive. Just like the Bible said, the train has three stories. So combat takes place on the three stories, and you can get cards that drop units up and down, and as they fight, if they don't kill the units, the foes go up to the next level of the train, and you still have your units up below, but you can put units on top. So it adds a very different layer of a deck builder roguelike that I'm finding very interesting right now.
Yeah, I just saw this one on Steam and heard someone else talking about it recently. It looks cool, and I like that premise a lot.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that it's like also like you're at least enjoying it so far.
I'm really enjoying it so far. And then I have another game I'm going to start tonight called Atomic Crops, which is basically a bullet hell game mixed with a farm simulator.
Yeah, that's one I think that popped up on Switch a little bit ago, a few months ago. So let me know how you like that.
Yeah, I just got Epic Game Code for it, so I'm really looking forward to that one too. I'm just playing a bunch of crazy things.
Yeah, no, that's the way to do it. How about you, Mike? Anything else, or should we wrap on up?
No, that's about it. We'll probably try Crucible later tonight. We'll see.
Yeah, I'll give that a shot. We'll talk about that next week. I'll talk.
Have either of you played it yet?
No,
not yet.
I went and pressed the button to download it on Steam, and that's it. But yeah, we'll talk about that next week. We'll talk more about Echo because I want to make some progress.
And yeah, get going in Echo.
Yeah, I want to get going in Echo and like maybe just like see if there's like a boss or like see what the next levels look like. It's pretty cool. All right. Yeah, I think that's going to do it for us, though. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. First, though, why don't we start with Jason? Go ahead and tell people where they could find you on the internet.
Well, you can find me at GameSpeed, of course, and you can find me on Twitter at Jason_Wilson, where I have had a very bad take today about the Madden Bowl.
Yeah, find that on his Twitter. Go ahead and respond to him there. How about you, Mike?
Find me on Twitter at Tolkoto, TOLKOTO, and be sure to go to 90sDisney.com for my 90s Disney podcast.
It was,
and don't forget Area Harpies in Ohio.
Yeah, yeah. You can always find me, especially once it opens back up, you'll find me at the Poland, Ohio Arby's.
And you guys keep saying that. Now I feel like I have to get Arby's because I'm thinking about that buffalo chicken sandwich.
I am smoking pastrami tomorrow.
Oh, that's good stuff. I am Jeff Grubb on Twitter. I am Jeff Grubb on twitch.tv and then youtube.com/Jeffrey Grubb for my uploaded videos there. How Games Make Money, the latest episode, went up today. I talked to Guillaume Jamet, who I tried very hard to get his name right. He is the VP of Publishing and Marketing at Dear Villagers, which is a indie publishing label, kind of getting started over the last couple of years. It's a good conversation. And you know, I was going to say this, Mike, that last episode of 90s Disney, where you guys talk about all the things, it was a good episode. Wow. It's making me antsy to really go to Disney World with my kids.
There you go. Then they'll finally love you.
Yes, exactly. The dream.
That's how it works.
Right. Yeah, let's get out of here. Let's say goodbye to everybody. Have a good one. Thank you for listening. Until next week, take care.
Baby shark, chop, 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 chop.
Baby shark.
I didn't play my song for Jason.
Learn that song, Mike.